Hi, if I could take a moment of your time before we start, if you've enjoyed previous episodes or if you enjoy this episode, if you could subscribe on the platform that you listen to, that would be really helpful. It helps us get more guests and push the podcast forward. Thanks.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hi everyone, welcome to the Car Chat Podcast. I'm Sam Moores. I'm standing outside and you might hear the odd airplane, so apologies for that. But I'm here with Peter Charters today. Hello.
Good afternoon, Sam. Good to see you.
Welcome. Can you tell the audience a little bit about sort of who you are and what you do?
Yeah, of course. So we're here on a Maserati test drive event. And from my point of view, I'm general manager for Maserati for North Europe, which is Scandinavia, UK and Ireland. I joined the company 3.5 years ago, as I tell everybody, 3 months before COVID. So perfect timing. But it was perfect timing because it's right at the beginning of Maserati's renaissance in terms of product portfolio. So right just before the introduction of MC20.
Yeah.
So I look after the team in the UK, which is a sales, marketing, after sales and finance function. And we're based in West London.
Nice. It's an interesting, like obviously Maserati has a massive history, but my sort of like journey with Maserati has, I've sort of seen them around and I've seen Gran Turismos kind of cruising around and they always sound good. But as someone that's into sports cars and kind of a bit of racing and whatnot, in my, I didn't start driving until I was sort of 22, so maybe like 10 years ago. There wasn't really, Maserati didn't really fit into that kind of thing. I knew there was loads of heritage from a while ago of all these crazy race cars and loads of victories and stuff. But there wasn't anything that sort of connected with me. And it seems like, you know, Maserati are now going, hang on, we're a proper brand. We're going to make some cool cars and everything's changing. Can you talk me through like what's happened and where we're going?
I will certainly try to. So I think you refer to, you know, Maserati's somewhat glorious past, but also an extended past. So we've kind of come in and out of racing, in and out of, you know, various segments and channels over the decades. And I think the fundamental difference now is that we've invested in a completely new product portfolio, which covers not just, you know, your beautiful everyday cars, but also we're coming back into racing. And, you know, that for us is bringing back the heritage that we, you know, that people fondly remember, right? For example, we're going back into GT2 racing. We're in Formula E racing. We won our first event last weekend in Jakarta, which was great to see. And we're starting to build supercars. So our P24, you know, that's our first supercar. And it's brilliant, bringing the confidence back to the brand from our inner perspective, but also hopefully from a customer perspective as well.
P24. Sorry, I've missed this. Tell me what this is.
So P24 is a supercar. It's the next generation of MC12.
MC12. Yeah.
So it's a track only supercar. There you go. We're building 62 worldwide. That's it.
Right.
They're all sold already.
Great.
And they will be delivered in 2024 and 2025.
And what's the basics of that? What's the powertrain?
So the basis is the MC20.
Yeah.
But then it's being developed, because it's still in development, being developed as a supercar, even above the MC20, but using the MC20 as its sort of fundamental basis.
Yeah. So the same engine.
Same engine, with changes that brings it up to a 730 horsepower engine. So it'll be
pretty rowdy.
Pretty an exciting prospect.
Looking back, the MC12, I don't want to like dive too much back, but like that is a car that has carried along with me over when I first came across it, and then I came across one of the courses, hooning it around a track, and you can't forget that. That is just iconic now, as like awesome. But we've now got MC20, which I went out for the first time today, which was a really interesting experience. Actually, I didn't really. Okay, it's difficult to not hear what people have done before, and some people have driven it, and you hear various things. It was only a sort of short drive. I was amazed at how nice a drive. Now that's not probably the right word, but it goes down a road really nicely. Like it just kind of flows. Nothing's harsh, nothing's bumpy. It's well supported. Is that like a Maserati ethos creeping into the supercar, going, we want the performance, we want the engine, we want that stuff, but at the same time, we don't want to beat you up in the process?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, MC20 is our halo car. So, it started the new era in Maserati, and it brought together luxury and racing. Our history has been largely about being a touring car, Gran Turismo type of vehicles like that. So it's absolutely fundamental that we wanted to have a car that was drivable in the day-to-day, but also an exciting racing car. I think, read your reviews is what I would say to people, and other reviews as well that tend to say that it is a fantastic blend of them both.
Yeah.
It can be an exciting racing car, but it can be also your enjoyable day-to-day car as well.
That was it. Like driving a convertible around today, it's a lovely sunny day, down some leafy British B roads. It was, even at like 10 miles an hour, I was like, this is lovely. This is very nice. And it's such a good looking car, which we'll not actually talk about competitors, but lots of modern cars are not that good looking. And it's nice to see a brand making something that I would say is almost like classically beautiful, not in like an old way, but in like a modern way. Really cool. So a lot of the ranges are now being redone, aren't they? They're sort of being revisited, updated infotainment, updated stuff. What has changed recently and what's coming soon?
Okay. So the way to look at it, I would say, is that we're replacing the entire range of Maseratis in the next, already started with MC20 2 years ago, and by 2025, everything will be not only refreshed with brand new models, but also everything will have an electric vehicle variant as well. And I guess that's an important part of our next journey, is that all our new models will be fully battery electric.
Yeah.
We've not gone down the hybrid road. We're going straight to battery electric. So by 25, every model will have an electric variant. By 2030, we will only be selling electric vehicles. So we will be the first Italian luxury sports car manufacturer to be fully electric, which is maybe not what people expect. And I think that's a good thing for us. We've always been an innovative brand, and I think that's a positive for us. So we will be replacing the whole range over the next few years. Obviously, we've introduced Grecale.
Yeah.
And Grecale SUV is bringing us into a new customer database where we've not been before. Obviously, we have Levante, which is a bigger car, a more expensive car. But Grecale fits in the what we call a DSUV, this like medium-sized SUV, and is everyday exceptional, which is what we say. It's a car that you can use every day, but you feel that the experience is an exceptional experience. So that's the start. And then the other cars will come in the next couple of years.
Having a sort of a history of awesome sounding engines, and all of these got pretty good engines in them, or at least available. Are you guys like, oh, we're going to house this EV thing? Is it a straight cut transition, or is it going to sort of meld over 10 years or something with the new EVs coming in?
Yeah, it's a good question. With the changing legislation, obviously you have to keep a close eye on that. And we are a global brand, you know, a relatively small, exclusive global brand. So we have to be aware of what's happening everywhere. So it will not be that we will start with electric and everything else just disappears overnight. But new model entries, you can imagine, are likely to be electric vehicles. But for the moment, for example, with Grecale, that is a ICE engine.
Yeah.
But later this year, we will have the fully electric version. And those two will go hand in hand for the near future.
And are they on the same platform underneath?
Yes.
And that was designed like that
everyone's done it slightly differently, but when you look at a Grecale, it's the battery electric vehicle is very similar to the ICE, the design. It's not a separate platform. But obviously the underpinnings are designed to be a fantastic drive, whether you're driving an electric version or you're driving an ICE version.
Yeah, yeah. One of the things that I know, just depending on how they've all been configured, is you normally lose, it's like a sort of practical question, but you lose a little bit of boot space going to a BEV sometimes. Is that going to be the case with those? Do you know?
I'd need to check the technicals on it. But I understand there's a battery. But for us, the way we've done it, we've put a battery up, you know, as a T battery underneath to give us the lowest possible gravity, lowest possible point to the ground. To get the ride and drive best. So in that respect, it doesn't impact massively on the interior of the vehicle. Mm.
Yeah, yeah. That's interesting. And then it's going to be, I'm really intrigued as to how this is all going to pan out, because I've got an EV and I like using it. Like it's great. Mm. But I'm really interested in how the sort of more luxury end it's going to go, and you're looking around and going, what are all the, presumably you guys are like, what's everyone else doing? All the technology is just changing so fast. I don't know whether you've dug much into or picked up on much of this, but like, I don't even know how you go, I'm going to make a car in 5 years, 10 years, because the technology is changing so much. Presumably it's quite difficult, and there's a lot of like, fingers crossed, like obviously calculated, but you're sort of going, hopefully this is going to work out.
Yeah, I mean, look, we try to bring in the most innovative, advanced technologies we possibly can. And this year, obviously, Grecale gets a full battery electric vehicle, but also Gran Turismo's the fully battery electric version this year as well, with 800 volt technology. You know, technology changes. That is the cutting edge of technology at the moment. And it would be our intention to keep it at the cutting edge of technology.
Do we know like range numbers on that yet?
I can tell you certainly on the Grecale, we're at 500 kilometer range.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
You know, obviously in our luxury segment, as it is an everyday, exceptional, but everyday vehicle, we realized that we need to have a substantial range because people will be using it for all types of journeys. So our view is that 500 kilometers or 310 miles is more than sufficient for the vast majority.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think that average journey is like 20 miles or 15 or something like that. But yeah, it does. So, and when are we going to see those on the road? When are those going to be on the road?
So at the moment, we're expecting to see those vehicles, customer deliveries in quarter four of this year for both Grecale and Gran Turismo. So it's not far away.
No.
But of course, we will not be building lots of them. So like with many of the electric vehicle entrants, it will be supply constrained, you know, which is not such a bad thing. And it's part of our strategy anyway to not oversupply the market. We want to make sure that we're...
Keep demand slightly above.
That would be our ideal.
That'd be the ideal. Yeah. And then we're making a MC20 GT2 car?
Yes. Yes. So that will be launched this year. In fact, next month, I think, nice. It will be shown in Spa. And we'll be back into GT2 racing. So that's an exciting...
And what will... What's that going to compete in?
It will be in the GT2 racing calendar. Don't know the exact details of what it's going to be doing, but it will be, it'll be
I'm trying to think what other cars are there in that. I know there's a few in that category. It looks like quite a pretty good gentleman racers series. Like, I know there's shift from GT3 to GT2. They go from essentially more corner grip to then GT2, they're faster in a straight line and slightly, I think they're possibly a little bit slower in the corners or similar, with the view of there being basically less overtakes in corners and more on straights, therefore less crashes and less expensive bills. But it's great to see another manufacturer out there producing more racing cars, and then we're going to see them around. Do you know if there's possible plans for other segments?
Well, what I would say is that you can tell that we are growing our business into various areas. All of this has happened within just a very, very short period of time. So I don't know what the future holds in terms of, you know, in the years to come, but we're definitely wanting to be seen in those sort of more exclusive, exciting, luxury and sporty events and categories. So, you know.
Yeah, sure, we'll see. We'll see. How does it feel working, or not so specifically for Maserati, but working for Maserati in like today when you meet random people? What's the sort of perception of Maserati, or how has it sort of changed over the last couple of years or 10 years?
I think it's really interesting because I've not been with Maserati that long, so 3.5 years. And I think what the historical view is that people, they know the brand. There's an awareness of the brand, very clear, and people usually have positive, you know, luxury racing type of thoughts when they think of the brand. The challenge for us has been getting awareness of the products themselves, because we are a small manufacturer. You know, we're not producing thousands of cars. We don't want to produce thousands of cars. So getting that across has been a challenge. Now, it's been significantly easier in the last 2 years, let's say post-COVID at least, because of all the new products we've got. I mean, we're here today, you know, we're driving cars, we have many journalists and influencers who are happy to come and drive our new products. So we don't go on television, we're not advertising our cars, but we want people to be driving them and reporting about them and talking about them. That's been a lot easier in the last 2 years than it has been previously. And MC20 has been really the hub, the start of that conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. Because if you'd said to me, do you want to come and drive some Maseratis maybe 5 years ago, depending on whatever, I'd be like, yeah, maybe, but I was kind of like, yeah, they all kind of need a refresh. They've all been around for a long time. They're not really there. Whereas like, yeah, now, There's so much change in such a short period of time. And I definitely had that perception of like, it's a luxury, it's got a performance brand, it's got lots of history. But if I was to go, would I buy one? There wasn't a car, there weren't any cars that I wanted to buy. And I imagine actually there's like a sort of pent up kind of demand in the back of people's minds sort of around where people go, well, I like the brand. Mm. It's a cool brand. They've done lots of cool stuff. She's got to make the car, so hopefully we're gonna be there.
I agreed. I think we have now started to make the cars, and I think this spring or summer period is a brilliant example for us. For the first time, as far you know, in almost recent history, going back 10 years, you know, we've had a whole week of journalists driving our cars a couple of weeks ago. We've got this week and next week, we're on a regional tour with all the journalists and influencers driving our car. We're going to be at Goodwood Festival of Speed, but in a bigger way, showing off all our new cars. And we've got Formula E events. We're going to be we're going to be making a noise there as well. Never in the recent history of Maserati have we wanted to been able to and been, you know, confident enough to do that, which is fantastic.
Yeah, that must make it. It's a pretty exciting time to be working at Maserati.
It's almost like too exciting. You know, we have so much to launch, so much to tell people about, that we have to plan very carefully. Otherwise, we're, you know, one on top of each other. So we've got lots of stories to tell everybody. And that's our challenge. It's a nice challenge to have.
Yeah. Right? It's as like an outsider looking at these sorts of things, you see like, oh, there's an event here and then they're at Goodwood and whatever. And you kind of forget that there's endless hours and the team behind the scenes just like getting everything ready and planning. And I imagine you've got stuff planned for far into the future.
It's crazy but exciting at the same time. Last year at Goodwood, of course, was the first time we had MC20 there, and we had David Beckham came down and did the launch, if you like, for us, the Goodwood launch, and it just created so much excitement. It was a real proud moment to be there on the stand.
Yeah, very cool. Well, thanks for letting me have a go in some cars today.
Pleasure, Sam.
I normally wrap this up with five questions, and I reckon we'll see if you can. We'll see how we go. Let's give them a go.
Okay.
Do you have a most memorable driving trip or journey?
Probably it would be my first trip to Italy in my job as a Maserati head, where we got to drive the MC20 around the racetrack.
Nice.
I would have to say that was my most fun experience. It's hard to beat an MC20 on the racetrack for me.
So that would probably
be it. My next favourite one will be when the Gran Turismo comes out and I get to drive it through the Alps.
You want to do the road trip there and the road trip back. That'll be a good one. If this is tricky when you're restricted, but I imagine you'll be able to come with this. If you're going to drive one car for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Cello. MC20 Cello.
Yeah.
Am I allowed to say that?
Yeah, well, unless you want to dive into something else.
It's hard to beat. It's the perfect combination of, you know, super sports car, but very cool when you take the roof off.
Carbon tubs, you don't lose anything with having the roof down. I love on convertibles the little screen behind you that you can have down. Mm. Like, why can't we just have that on every single car? Just like, a little screen come down, I've got the engine, but I don't have to take the roof off. That would just be so much better.
I'll suggest that to our innovation lab.
Most undervalued car at the moment?
I'm going to obviously speak about Maseratis. So I would say most undervalued would be, for me, Ghibli Trofeo.
Right.
Because if you get a chance to drive that, and we've given it to some journalists recently, and if you read the write-ups, they're very, very positive. You know, V8 engine in a rear-wheel drive car.
Yeah.
That's a lot of fun in a saloon car. So I would say that's probably the undervalued car.
Yeah,
but if you drive it, you probably won't undervalue it.
Most interesting car to you at the moment? What are you sort of thinking about? Tell me.
The most interesting, I'm going to stick to Maserati. Right?
Yeah.
For me, it's got to be Gran Turismo. You know, we had our first left-hand drive one arrive just a couple of weeks ago. It's hard not to walk past it and smile. Because it is such a revolutionary interior, evolutionary exterior, because it's such a popular exterior shape anyway.
Good shape.
That it just feels like it has to be a huge success for us. So I'm touching wood, keep fingers crossed, but I think that's massive prospects.
And when are we going to start seeing them? They're not around yet, are they? No.
July.
Oh, very soon.
Very, very soon. The first ones will arrive in July in right-hand drive. Small numbers. Again, we're just bringing them in to meet demand or slightly behind demand.
Yeah.
But the first ones come in July.
And what sort of sales numbers are you sort of, I don't know, aiming for? Or sort of expecting, or maybe to even production numbers over the next sort of couple of years of, let's say, Gran Turismo and maybe MC20?
I mean, what Carlos Tavares, who obviously are the head of our business, he is very, very clear in what he says about volume. Volume's not the driver of the business. Profit is the driver of the business, which is fundamental to everything we do. So we don't have volume targets for sales. Yeah. We plan for production, but we have volume targets for sales. Having said that, it is our expectation in the UK that we will probably double our sales in the next 12 months compared with last year. And that will be across the whole range, of course.
What sort of number would that be?
Well, that would make it about, you know, somewhere between, I would say, 1,200 and 2,000. But okay. It just depends what the customers want to buy. If it's more, then we'll build more. But if it's less, we'll build less.
Yeah. Yeah, there's definitely, we've seen some manufacturers over the last couple of years more just dump cars into dealerships, and then they go out on finance, and then they come back, and then you just look at all the dealerships and they're all just full of cars that you know they're upside down on, and it's obviously coming back to bite them.
It's one of our fundamental principles is making sure we protect the residual values of our cars. So for example, on new Grecale, you will not have seen a used car Grecale for the first 6 months of its life. And that's for the benefit of the customer, ultimately, as well as ourselves, obviously.
Yeah.
We are absolutely determined to continue with that.
Well, yeah, because if you, no matter how much you love a brand, if you buy a car and then just on a hypothetical situation where it somehow loses 90% of its value in a year, you're never going back, you're never buying another one because it's too painful.
Exactly. And we have to be mindful, we are in a completely new era. We're bringing a lot of new customers to our brand that have never been with us before. They must have the right experience, both with our dealer network. So we're bringing a whole new corporate identity into our dealer network over the next 2 years to give the ultimate experience, but also their experience with the car from a quality point of view and from a value point of view. You know?
Yeah. It's so critical. Five-car garage. Oh, this is tricky. Five-car garage, unlimited value.
I don't think that's the question I'm going to answer.
two-car garage.
No. I haven't got a garage.
you wouldn't have a Ghibli V8 and a cello?
Well, if I'm allowed to choose a family of Maseratis...
Yeah, you can have two.
For sure. If I'm allowed two, it's a cello and it's a Gran Turismo.
Nice.
Probably a Gran Turismo Trofeo.
Yeah,
that's got to be my two.
That sounds like that's a pretty good two-car garage. Yeah. Obviously, we're slightly limited, but
because the Gran Turismo, you know, it's when you see it, the space that you have in a Gran Turismo, design aside, which is obviously iconic, the rear space, the luggage space, you can use that for pretty much your everyday living.
Yeah.
MC20 cellos for a Sunday, right?
Saturday, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Can be used every day, but in reality is not used every day. Well, thanks very much for coming on the podcast and giving me a little bit of an insight into what's going on.
My pleasure, Sam, and enjoy the rest of the day.
Cheers.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.